It's Tuesday, January 3rd, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome to the show. We've got a great one for you. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha, everyone, and welcome to this new year, and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. Hi, everybody. I'm Todd Cochran, your host, and of course, we want to thank all of our long-term listeners for staying subscribed and being part of our show here. And for those of you that are checking us out for the very first time, make sure you visit geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there, and also subscribe to our mailing list, and you'll find a link to that in the second column of the website. And of course, check out all the archive podcasts. Well, happy new year to everyone. And what a bang this new year is already starting off to be. It's going to be an amazing week. For most of you, you have already downloaded our special announcement show that I made on Saturday that essentially lets you know that I've got my bags packed. Well, actually, they're not packed yet, but they're going to be packed after the show tonight. And I'm leaving for Las Vegas tomorrow evening at about 10:55 p.m. out of Honolulu, and we'll be arriving Wednesday morning into Las Vegas for the Consumer Electronics Show. I'm going to be meeting Andy McCaskey from Slashdot Review, and you can find his show over at slashdotreview.com. Him and I are going to be traveling the show floor there in search of great stories. Lots of podcasting action is going to take place, where I'm going to be producing a podcast every night of the show. So essentially what's going to happen, and I may do one on Wednesday too. Haven't quite decided yet. All depends on what's going on. Maybe I'll give you an update of some sort. But for sure, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night, I'm going to be recording. So you're going to have all kinds of podcasts in your inbox throughout the CES. Now, I travel back to Hawaii Monday the 9th. So that show will be up in the air depending on what time I get in. So we'll keep you advised. But boy, oh boy, it's just been a madhouse here. I've got a stack. Let me look at it. I essentially put the word out in a couple of the mailing lists I belong to, said, hey, if you're going to be at CES and you want to do an interview, or if you're doing a product announcement, whatever it may be, let me know. And I have, let's see here. Can you guys hear that? That's my stack of materials from emails that have come in, information on CES, basically show schedule, where stuff's going to be. And we're going to talk more about the Consumer Electronics Show here later in the show on how big this thing really is. But we want to hear from you. If you have something or a company that you want seen or want to hear information about, you need to send me email immediately, okay, to geeknews@gmail.com. If you want me to go track down a company, if you have questions that need to be asked, I need to know as soon as possible, okay? And I'm going to put those in priority lists. I'm going to put them in a priority list of what you want to know, who they are, what the major announcement is. You know, just send me whatever you want to see, and I'll do my best to get through and see those vendors. I can't promise I'm going to cover everything, because there are 2,500 vendors and 150,000 people that basically we all have to we're going to have to be moving and shaking and we're going as techpodcast.com. We're going to be doing some shows for that. And of course, on Saturday, we're going to have our live roundtable. Now, this is going to be a live roundtable like no other over at Tech Podcast. Now, typically what we've done in the past, it's been, you know, we've come up with some topics, everyone's done their research, and we present those to you. But this week, Andy McCaskey and I, along with the Tech Podcast crew, are going to be doing a lot of CES coverage. And if everything goes right, Andy and I will be on the showroom floor. Now, we've got some things to work out with connectivity issues. We've got an ace in the bag, and so hopefully that's all going to come together. But if you have a booth that has internet connectivity and you want to help us out at during CES and you want to help us do our live show, send me an email. Okay, here's a prime opportunity to get some real huge promotion time for your show or for your company, and by doing letting us do our live event from your booth. Now, we may have another vendor that we're going to have to work with. We don't know yet. We'll know on late today or late Tuesday afternoon. We'll know whether or not we're going to be working with another company as well. But I'm pretty excited about what we're going to be doing there. And, of course, the live event is sponsored by GoToMeeting. And here's some information on that. Hey, folks, you've got to check out GoToMeeting. Why? Because you can hold meetings right over the net from anywhere. Plus, you can hold all the meetings you want for one flat rate. Try it free for 30 days. No, you don't need a credit card to get started. Just visit gotomeeting.com/tech roundtable. That's gotomeeting.com/tech roundtable to get your free trial now. All right, I know many of you are just getting back after the holidays. You're going to be going back to work. Some of you are still off. The grind is going to, you know, hit you. You got to catch up on all the work that's been left over from the holiday period to get back in motion. Well, we know some of you are going to be listening to this show for the first time in a number of weeks tomorrow morning. And we want to make sure that you're abreast of what we're up to. So I am going to be sending out periodic information on the newsletter. So it is essential that if you want to get up-to-date info of what I'm doing, what I'm going to be hitting, what I'm going to be talking about, you get subscribed to the newsletter, and you can, of course, find that on the main website. Now, we're going to be producing not only content for /.review and Geek News Central, we're also going to be sending very unique sound clips to the techpodcast.com crew. So if you're on the mailing list over there as well for the GoToMeeting promotions, you're going to be able, or actually for the roundtable, excuse me, you're going to be able to get updates on what other members are talking about via CES. So you're going to hear some exclusive stuff on their shows. Now, if you look at the techpodcast.com website today, all of our affiliate sites are linked up on the main page. Now, what we've done there is because the affiliates are in partnership with us, they help build revenue for the techpodcast.com site, they're going to get access to a lot of this information right off the bat. As quickly as we can get it to them, they'll have it. So we look forward to doing a big collaboration. So if you're listening to shows within the techpodcast.com network itself, you're going to get more tidbits than probably what you're going to find on a lot of other podcasts, because we're going to be multi-tiered this thing and have a multi-pronged approach. Now, obviously, we've got several motives for going to CES. Number one, it's the right thing to do. It's the right place to be. And just a great show. You know, it really, really is. And I look forward to experiencing my first CES. I've gotten all kinds of emails on what to do and what not to do. And you all have, some of you have really come through and get me schooled up real quick. But it's going to be live. It's going to be fun. And I'm sure you're tired of hearing about it already. But hey, the main thing is about this show is about giving back. And let's save you some money, okay? Your number one source for all your internet needs, GoDaddy.com, has new domain names, transfers, and renewals as low as $1.99. Plus, check out their hosting plans. We've talked about these before. They are just absolutely terrific. They've got website builders, secure certificates, and much, much more. And plus, as a Geek News Central listener, enter the code Todd, that's T-O-D-D, when you check out and save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Thanks for GoDaddy for being the primary sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. Okay, what else? Hey, you know, today is a new day, a new month. Of course, it's a new day. And what that means is the voting stats have been reset at Podcast Alley. This is an important month just because of CES and exposure. Help us out. Help us get go over there and vote for us, if you would, please. There'll be a link in the show notes. There'll also be a link that's going to be sent out in the newsletter that's sent out when I publish the show. Go over there and vote for us. It would be greatly appreciated, and help us really push this show to the limit during CES. I guess that's all. Oh, well, as many of you know, my folks are in town, and they're staying over at my sister's place. But this afternoon, my mom and dad came over to the house, and we spent a nice afternoon, went out and did a, a couple of quick shopping runs to pick some stuff up, but had a nice kickback day here at the house, almost more kickback than the 1st of January. I've almost felt like my New Year's Day was spent tracking stuff down for CES. Now, I'm doing this show early, believe it or not. It's only 8 o'clock here. My kids are still up, so you guys are probably hearing them in the background. But I want to get this done because I got to get packed and ready to rock and roll. Okay, what do I have in just regular new stuff tonight? You know, because it's the holiday weekend and there is not a great deal of news. But I did find some great tidbits for you tonight. We'll talk about those here in a second. Let's see if I got everything I wanted to cover. I think I have. Again, any comments for CES, geeknews@gmail.com with the subject line CES. If you want to interview, a CES interview, okay? All right, over on Mark Cuban's weblog, he has a posting up that says, Newspaper Stupidity and Shackelford. And you'll have to read the whole piece to get the full impact of this. But what he is relating to here is that newspapers, with the increased cost of paper, and the, you know, basically newspapers are downsizing a lot of their staffs. He's wondering why newspapers are putting on articles within their release newspapers that makes sense, that are only like 50 words long. He thinks that newspapers would be better suited to do more in-depth now, you know, instead of doing these little short sound bites of information. The added value in what newspapers can offer to the general public is a very long series or detailed information about a story. And he doesn't think newspapers are getting it anymore, and that, you know, that they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot by not posting, you know, these very long detailed stories. And I don't know about you, but I have not read a newspaper. Now, this is going to tell you how long it's been. It's probably been, well, I think when I was at Gnome Dex, at staying at the hotel, they provided USA Today. I think I threw it on the table one morning and looked at just the headlines or something like that. But I have not read a newspaper besides pulling out the advertising. That's the only thing a newspaper is good for me anymore, is pulling out the advertisements. But I think this is an indication, you know, we've seen the decline. Newspapers are running scared. Those publishing houses are running scared because the web is starting to really make an impact on their subscription numbers. So what do you guys think in the coming year? What do you think is going to happen to newspapers? Are they going to revitalize themselves and listen to Mark and start doing more detailed articles that will give us more of a reason to stay subscribed and having delivered to our homes and actually reading them? That's the question I think we should all ask this day. And what's going to happen when the internet overcomes the tech factor, and where almost everyone is getting their news via online sources? Is the newspapers going to go away? And then what happens to quality of reporting? And I think the same thing goes into talking about the TV media. So I found another article about TV media. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But I think there's we're looking for what do you think is going to be the biggest change in 2006? Personally, I think it's going to be in video delivery. And everyone's putting a lot of bets on that. So we'll see. And we'll see if internet TV or IPTV is going to really kick off this year. And it's going to be a fun ride no matter what for the user, because it's going to mean more choices for us, hopefully. Okay. I've never read this guy's website before, but he's an Australian, and it's a Nick. I'm going to just slaughter his last name. It's Kubrovalik, maybe. And he's got an article on here that talks about the economics of online storage. And he talks about the actual cost of delivery for, like, Google having their Gmail service and what it costs for them to provide that service to each and every one of us that have a Gmail account. But he also goes into more in-depth and talking about how that does not necessarily translate into online storage and also web services. And if you guys realize and you go out and look, and obviously Gmail has given you 2 gigs of storage. You can access it 24 hours a day, you know, wherever you're at. It's, you know, it's free. Well, if you're doing web hosting or having data delivered via the internet, via a hosting provider, obviously there is not a free, it's not free. Yeah, you have to pay for that bandwidth. And he goes into the factor here, uses a lot of factors and is very conservative, but he thinks it costs Google about $3 a year for an average Gmail usage. Now, I think that's maybe a little low, but they have such a huge infrastructure that their costs are spread so wide, it very well could be true. But he contrasts that to file storage, where it talks about 100 megabytes of allowed storage and a number of people accessing it, where it could go up to as much as like $40 per year just to provide 100 megabytes of regular standard storage where you can drop files and documents and have multiple people access them. It's a very insightful article. There's a great number of comments. I think there's around 20 comments that are after the actual fully detailed article. So go ahead and check this out and see if you agree with him. I think I do to a certain aspect, but boy, wouldn't it be cool if we got to the point where, we didn't have to worry about hosting costs. We didn't have to worry about the delivery costs of delivering a podcast or audio or video to a million people. You look at this show, and the show has a very large following, and the cost of delivery would be pretty high. And it is pretty high considering how much traffic we move. So thank God for Libsyn. Those guys have been terrific over there. And those of you that are podcasters are not using them, I highly recommend their service. That's just a personal plug on my point. But a lot of podcasters would not be able to stay in business or not be able to continue to do what they do today without Libsyn and other companies that are coming out with these great hosting models. But over time, let's see if it continues to go down. Okay, those of you that are Xbox 360 users and like to hack around a little bit, you have already realized that some hacks are starting to show up where you can actually now have a bootable DVD disc. It'll boot your Xbox into bypasses a lot of stuff that Microsoft does not necessarily want you to bypass. And with the thousands of people working on the hacking the Xbox and making it available to use other types of games besides the ones that are officially released, I'm sure this concerns Microsoft quite a bit, but it is interesting to see how this community works so hard to, or actually not this community, but the community works so hard to do this workaround. I'm sure the majority of people out there probably don't hack their Xbox, but I know a lot of people that are geeks do. But these guys are working fast, putting together all kinds of code. And this first Xbox 360 boot disk came out on 12/27, as reported by Engadget. I found something very interesting today on a weblog, and I don't know exactly how it was done. And there's not a lot of information on what service actually created this. But how would you like to be able to provide a URL to a Google map that would basically show your location, give the details of like your name, your website, your business type, your email, and where your business is located in a general area? Someone has got something going on with that type of a functionality, and I found it over on Mark Cantor's website. So if anyone can figure out where this link originated and how this guy did this, let me know, because I have not figured it out yet. But it is a pretty cool business card, and one that I think I'd like to employ on for myself. So check that out over at broadbandmechanics.com. Be a link in the show notes, of course. Okay, of course, all eyes now are focusing on the Consumer Electronics Show. And O'Malik has a good post on watching videos at CES and how the competition is just going to be absolutely fierce for attention for the different types of video players that are going to be out there, anything from home entertainment to self-publishing, recording, you name it. It's all about video and all about who can deliver the highest pixel resolution and at the lowest price, all the way from HDTV to IPTV set-top boxes, the whole nine yards, including PCs capable of playing high definition. So I think he's got a lot of he's got some great info here, and he links to a device that almost looks like a Mac Mini. It's the size of it, and I'm telling you, there's a lot of cool stuff that's coming out, and I appreciate this article because it made me go look for the vendor and add the vendor to my to my go see and check out list while at CES. So if you've got a, you know, like I said earlier, if you have a vendor that you want us to go look at, you need to let us know for sure, okay? Because there's just so much there. It's hard to stay focused on what's going to be important and what's not. There's a article over in on O'Reilly's developer weblogs website at weblogs.O'Reilly.com. And I kind of promised you guys, you Internet Explorer users, that I would quit kicking on IE so much. But web developers are starting to pull their hair out because Internet Explorer is so far behind in staying current with a lot of the technology that's out there, some of the new techniques that are being used on the web, that what looks good in Firefox does not necessarily look good in Internet Explorer. And it talks about some of this guy's frustrations in images that are supposed to go on the website where they define the pixel width, etc. And he is just like, what is going on? How come I can't get, you know, I'm trying to do advanced type of things on my website and keep it current, yet because Internet Explorer is so old and so far behind, it is just, it's mangling what he's putting on his website and not making it look good and making the images look not sharp. And I've seen that a lot. And hopefully IE7 fixes this. And this is specific for a graphic intensive site. So if you've had any experience with this, and if you're a web developer and maybe can help this guy out, I'll put a link up to the show notes. Maybe you can give him some ideas on what he can do. But he's essentially pulling his hair out because he wants to look good and be current, but at the same time, stay IE compliant. So those of you that are using IE will be able to continue to use it effectively. Okay, on the last full-length show, I talked about the vulnerability that was in Internet Explorer. Until this date, today, January 2nd, there is no, of course, I'm recording this the night of January 2nd, there is no patch out there that completely fixes Internet Explorer from this risk from these WMF files. But I did find an article by a Microsoft employee who is he's a senior security strategist in the security technology unit at Microsoft, and his job is to explain to his customers how to keep Microsoft products running securely. And he's got a very long, I'm going to say it's 3 pages worth of text here on what can be done to help protect yourself. And it, what kills me about this is, you know, I'm glad that he wrote the post, but how many people that are out there, that can think about your parents, think about your friends that use Internet Explorer that don't even know there's a vulnerability out there right now, and they're just out there cruising away, you know, all happy. So, you know, why can't Microsoft start pushing some sort of an announcement to, you know, they've got all of the users that have registered Windows XP. They've got their email addresses. Why don't they send out some kind of security notice to them when something bad like this happens? I'd really like to know, and maybe it's time to ask Robert Scoble why they don't do that. Because here you've got millions of computers, hundreds of millions of computers at risk, with probably 97% of the population that has no idea that they're at a risk to, you know, essentially having their machines completely hacked. And I found this blog article, and it goes into 3 pages of information that will make most of your guys' eyes fog over. You know, come on, Microsoft, use your modern technology to inform your customers and give them an easy, you know, something easy to kind of give them some initial protection until the patch comes out. I'm sure they don't want to have mass panic going on throughout the security world, but that's what needs, or throughout the Internet Explorer user world, but that's what needs to happen. They need to come to the table and say, hey, we got an issue. Here's how you fix it. We're sorry. We'll see what we can do better. And give people more of an idea what they're facing out there today without just surfing blindly and then having the potential of being hacked unexpectedly. In the latest Dave Weiner's podcast, his Morning Coffee Notes, he has a great discussion within that about the RSS revolution. And I think it's a great, great segment. And I recommend all of you to go over to Dave's site and check out the latest Morning Coffee Notes. It's a good listen. And I know some of you like Dave, some of you don't. Personally, I don't care. I think he's an important person to listen to. You know, depending on where you sit on this, I know some of you say I don't like to listen to Dave, but at least listen to what he has to say about this. I think he makes some great points on the latest podcast. If you like playing around with OPMO editors, Kazo has a very cool Flash-based OPMO editor that he has just released, and the link will be up in the show notes. You all can check that out. You know, OPML, if you haven't been playing with it, you need to, and then get up to speed on what's going on with that. I think you're going to see a lot of evolution in OPML and a lot more usability of it in the coming months. Okay, a number of shows ago, I talked a lot about why you would pay, you know, why in the world would someone pay for a video via the Apple iTunes Store that they can watch for free on their TV and record with their DVR? And I know that the answer to that is, well, we like to take it with us, you know, time compressed schedules. We want to watch TV shows kind of like we do listen to our podcasts. Want to watch them while we're commuting, you know, downtime, et cetera. And I understand all that. That's all cool. But I also scratch my head a little bit and thinking, okay, you're paying for your cable bill. You're paying for the equipment that you can watch this stuff on. You know, it has to be more transparency and being able to move the content that you've already paid for instead of me have to pay it again. Now, I talked about a product recently called the Neuros MPEG 4 recorder and how that thing did such a great job recording television programs and being able to put it in a compact flash disk or card and be able to transfer that to your PC. And it works out that you can actually transfer it to your Apple video iPod just as easily. And it doesn't take too much extra work. Is for me, it's worth $1.99 to set this thing up and have it record and pull a full disc off and drop two or three video programs onto my video iPod. So I got to thinking, you know, with TiVo coming out with their thing, and they're going to be able to integrate supposedly video devices very closely into the application so that you're going to be able to sync and go your iPod or your other video type player. So, you know, what does that mean for TV? What does that mean for them? What does that mean for their model? What does this mean for this $1.99 buy videos online? I think it spells the end to it. I really think it does. I think the early adopters will get on board real quick. And I think a lot of you probably already are. And what it'll also mean is that essentially you're going to use technology to phase that. Going to do away, that business model is not going to be able to be sustainable. I really don't think it is. So there was an article on broadcastingcable.com that kind of goes into those points. And I don't want to go over the article. It's too long to really go over it, but the title of it's called The New Deal, How TV Executives Will Find Digital Dollars in the Coming Year. And it's broken down essentially into four sections. Number one, small screens equals small bucks for now. Number two, DVD sales could fall, ratings could rise. Number three, more hits will be available as copyright issues are settled. And I think number four is an important part of this where the author gets it right. It says TV companies will realign or get left behind. And it's the first sentence of this says, as technology evolves ever more rapidly, one of the biggest challenges for TV programmers will be getting different divisions of the company on the same page. And a lot of companies, the digital pace of the business is a separate place than network production, so it's going to rely on a lot of people getting along within their own companies. And this is from, quote unquote, from one of the studio chiefs, and it's going to be a mess to figure out. Well, I tell you what, while they're trying to figure it out, we're just going to go around them. We really, really are with technology. Now, a lot of these companies are going to fight, you know, what TiVo's doing and what other companies are doing to allow all of us that love fair use. You know, we pay for it once. Why should we have to pay for it again? So I think that what we're going to see here is we're going to see TV companies scrambling to make sure that they get as much dollars out of you as they can. But I also see on the innovator front, as many of us doing as much as we can to make sure that you save money and they don't take that money out of your pocket. So I think they hit this pretty much, hit the nail on the head on this article at broadcastingcable.com. Pretty good insight. So I'll let you guys check that out over there. And they're actually, there's an advertisement in here. It's some stuff that's going to be happening on CES with them too. So I'll see what I can find out about that. I found an article today that kind of made me smile a little bit. And the title of it is, You Never Forget Your First Web Server. And for those of you that are total geeks out there, you'll probably smile yourself when I've just said that. There was an article by Jeremy Zawadny that talks about the first server that he put on the internet. And I go back and I start thinking about my first experience. Let's see here, 90, when was it? I was in over 91 and 94. I was in Guam, moved to Maryland in 95. It's about 1996, maybe mid-1996, I put my first web server online, and it was a Windows, let's see here, well, let's go back, and I really did it wrong. This was the ultimate wrong way to put a server online. I was running a Wildcat Interactive Net Server, which was in beta, under Windows 98. No, not 98, Windows 95. Yeah, it would have been Windows 95. And it was just, I had it in a co-located in an ISP's office. Actually, the box was actually in a closet. I'm not kidding you. I'd pull a chair out of the closet and I could slide the chair in with me in it into a closet. I had a screen, a modem banks on either side. And it was just this little hole. And it was essentially a hole in the wall in a room where I could plug, because this ISP, this guy had servers everywhere, and it was where you always co-located at the time in an ISP or at a university or whatever. But I remember 2 o'clock in the morning, my server going down, and I have to drive the 7 miles to the ISP, and I had a key. The guy gave me a key. He was real cool about it. Millions of dollars worth of computer gear, and I have a key to the building. This would never happen today, obviously. And go in, reboot the computer, make sure it comes up, do whatever I had to do, and leave. Well, after about 6 months of 2 o'clock in the morning runs down to the ISP to reboot this machine, I went out and spent money and bought Windows NT 4.0. And thank goodness for that application, because it made life much better. And I ran that web server on, matter of fact, that web server runs today on Windows NT 4.0 that still sits and hammers bbsnets.com. That essentially is the same. It's not the same machine, but it's the same operating system and same setup that's been running for 10 years, I guess. Yeah, 10 years. Isn't that cool? And it sits there and hammers away. And instead of now being an ISP, it's down below my feet here in the office. And I remember that first experience with that machine. I was totally clueless. Did not know Unix at all at the time. I probably should have gotten involved, but I didn't. I went the easy route. But, you know, the application I was running was a Windows-based application, so I really didn't need to learn Unix. I had no desire to, because everything was running on a Windows-based machine. So I remember one night, it was a cold, cold December night, and I could not reach the server. So, you know, very, very rare when I had switched to NT 4.0. So I grumbled, got dressed, and went into where the server was at, and I walked in, and all I saw was a blinking prompt. A hacker got in and just totally, well, format C is what he did. And thank God I had backups of everything, and so I was able to get up and running within a few days. I think I invested in a firewall program called, what was it called? I can't even remember what the name of the firewall program was, but that solved the hacker issue, because I was running this thing wide open, no ports locked down, probably didn't have things patched. You know, it was a pretty sad existence, but you know, it was a learning experience. It was a lot of fun. And the thing just runs today. It just sits here and hammers away, and I don't even think about it. But for those of you that put a server on the net back in the early days of the internet, when things were just really starting to get kicking good, hey, let me know about your experience. And if you have just recently put a server up for the first time of your own, let me know how the experience compares to then as it does today. Now, I'm not talking about buying a dedicated machine. I'm talking about building your own, sticking it in a rack somewhere, plugging it in, and doing one that way. If you've done one recently for the first time, I want to hear your story and see how your experience has been. You know, it's just kind of a nice little trip down memory lane to start off the new year. Okay, there's a very good article on the Longtail blog. It talks about the decade of It's titled "The Decade the Blockbuster Died," and it talks about music releases and how the sales of those albums were in time frame. So I'm looking here at a graph table. It says 1966 and 1970, the top number one hit album sold like 7 million copies. 71 to 75, edging towards 9 million. 1976 and 1980, around 17.5 million. Then we go into 1981 to 1995. It drops down to about 15. We get into 19. Let's see here. Where's that go? From 86 to 90. Mike, I think I read it off wrong to you. In 1881, 85, 15 million, 1986, 1990, it drops down another to back 12. So you've seen this up curve of sales. Now we're seeing this decline. Now, they don't extend it out too far past 1990, but I'm wondering what the number of sales are now for new album releases. And it just goes to show you that, maybe the internet has had an effect on, blockbuster hits and sales. So pretty cool little, graph and some comments. And of course, there is some criticism on this that it didn't go deep enough. But I'll let you guys check that over on the long tail. Okay, there's article on the Register. It talks about music sales slide despite the RIAA's crushing blow against piracy. Did you all realize that this year they sued over 7,000 people, bringing the total to more than 16,000. They've essentially shut down almost all of the peer-to-peer stuff, with exclusion of some of the BitTorrent stuff out there. But they did go after some of the more popular BitTorrent hubs. But yet their sales are down 3.5% after being up last year 2.3%. So it gives you an indication that all their efforts to try to stop what they're considering to be the reason for decline of sales. And I think it might be a little more different. I think they're probably having some good success in slowing down peer-to-peer piracy of their works. But I think people may be just getting fed up and are not buying. Could that be what's happening as the reason for decline? Maybe peer-to-peer sharing is down, but maybe sales are down because people are fed up with their tactics. It's hard to tell, but good article nonetheless. Okay, those of you that live in a hot area, they have an Xbox 360. Hey, they've got a liquid cooling device out. This thing looks totally awesome. So if you're looking to cool your Xbox 360 down, I'll link the notes to the Uber Gizmo website, and you guys can check it out. Okay, there is a... I was kind of blown away. I knew that the CES... There's my little ones. You guys hear him yelling? I knew that the Consumer Electronics Show was big, but I didn't realize how big. It says that this event is going to consume 28 football fields. Oh my goodness. 28 football fields is how big this. Can you imagine? Can you imagine how huge that's going to be? Wow. We're going to find out live, folks, here in a few days. And, of course, the coverage already started in over at news.com. They've got some pre-show announcements gearing up for CES. Talks about companies are going to be launching smaller drives with more memory, how Kodak is going to be releasing a camera with two lenses in it, voice control coming to XM radio. Talks about Verizon's plans to offer mobile music downloads. We'll probably attend that press release. That'll be a pretty good one. They're talking about some stuff that's actually for those of you that are stargazers and how you can own your own personal planetarium. IBM is going to be making some announcements, it looks like, along with Intel on some chips. Of course, there's Intel has signed the Black Eyed Peas to entertain at its party on the Thursday, January the 5th. Hey, how do I get an invite to that? Does anybody know? Microsoft is going to be launching an updated Vista Preview. Whole bunch of stuff on handsets. Of course, we talked about the Commodore pose for a comeback next week. Of course, all the stuff on HD TV. Boy, there's it just goes on and on. Everyone's making an announcement, so it'll be fun. All right, how many of you have heard about, there's this war going on between the cable industry and the Bells? You know, basically, they're all fighting for customers within the internet service business. But did you guys realize that the Bells funded a group that's been handing out iPods to people who share their cable-related gripes via a website called My Cable Nightmare? And what's happened here is that Verizon actually gave $75,000 to a startup company to give out iPods for people that complained about their competitors. I don't know what to think about that. I think that's maybe smart on Verizon's part, but gosh. What else are they going to resort to? Okay, last article of the night, and I'm going to keep it to 40 minutes because we're going to have a full week. There's an article over on Boing Boing. This is more of a comical nature. It says, did a half-ton steel plug beat Sputnik into orbit by 2 years? And this talks about how there was the Los Alamos National Laboratory was doing a nuclear test, and where they were starting putting the nuclear weapons underground, and they were capping the area from where the bomb was going to go off. And apparently what happened was is the encasing or whatever it was the plug didn't stand up to the overpressure too well, and there's these radioactive lids that have been blown, what they suppose that are saying, into orbit. Now, if you think about the force it would take to put something into orbit, I don't know. I think it's good folklore, but it does make an interesting read, to say the least. Okay, I've got one promo for you tonight, and then we'll have a few closing comments and kick you out of here.
Are you aspiring to work in the film or radio industry? Are you interested in all things internet and gadget? If so, then From the Director's Chair podcast may be what you're looking for. Tune in every Thursday for news and chatter about film and radio. Each show is a side order of tech news, reviews, and rants. The podcast can be heard at techtrekgamer.libsyn.com. That's techtrekgamer.libsyn.com.
All right, folks, a very short show tonight. Not a lot of content out there just because everyone's still on holiday, but I expect it to be an action-packed week. I really, really do. I want to thank you for staying tuned in to the Geek News Central podcast and staying subscribed. For all of our long-term subscribers, thanks so much for being part of our family here. And as always, you can send comments to the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. And that would be a great way to reach me. If you want to reach me at CES, I'll send me an email. I'll send you an email back with my private cell number so that you can get through to me. Also, you can Skype me at Geek News Central when I'm online in the evenings. You also can, of course, send email to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. I want to thank all of you that have been with us. And, of course, I want to thank all of our listeners over at KYOU Radio for you guys for tuning in, and thank the staff over there for playing Geek News Central on the radio. All right, folks, we'll see you on Thursday, okay? That probably is going to be the first one. We'll see. And I'll keep you updated via the mailing list, so get subscribed to that. That's going to be a very, very good resource for me to send out a blast of information. Of course, there'll be information on the geeknewscentral.com website throughout the week. Lots of pictures, taking the high-res digital camera, so we'll get all kinds of cool pics. And if you want to see something specific from CES that you know that's going to be announced, or some company, or you want to want me to go talk to somebody on to get the inside scoop, send me an email. That's what it's going to take. All right, folks. Thanks so much. We'll see you on, it looks like, not Friday, but probably Thursday. Aloha.
Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here.